girls in my districting on Wednesday, April 4, year 2001, at 6:30 p.m. at Salem Library.
31, 2. I'm Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator and from District 17, which includes Kaiser and portions of Salem. Representative Janet Carlson, who's coming up here now, she's in District 32, which is South Salem, and if you get over to West, no, it's Jackie's.
Right.
Okay, and then we have Representative Vic Backman. Vic, you're District 33, right?
District 33, which is kind of northeast Salem and Kaiser.
And this is Representative Steve March, who's come all the way down from Portland to be involved in this hearing. That's not quite true. He was over at the Capitol, came over to participate in the hearing tonight, which is a redistricting hearing. Every 10 years, the Oregon legislature is required by law and constitution to take a look at the state's population and to draw 60 House seats and 30 Senate seats. That makes up your Oregon legislature. The House has 30, a Senate 60 seats, the Senate has 30. Each Senate seat has two House seats in it. And we're also responsible for drawing the 5 congressional districts. In the United States Congress, we presently have 5 individuals that represent the state of Oregon. That varies with population. We also have 2 U.S. senators, as you probably know. That never varies. Every state has 2 U.S. senators. But every state varies. Some states have 20, 30 members of Congress, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know.
California has over 50.
50 members of Congress. We have 5. And we will stay at 5. Even though we've had a dramatic increase in our state population, our number of Congress people will remain at 5, and we have that responsibility, too, to draw those lines. What we're doing is we're going out to the public with these meetings to a large extent. We still hold meetings in the Capitol where you can come and testify on your feelings about this. I'm on the Senate Rules Committee, and every Thursday at 3 o'clock, from 3 o'clock to 3:30, we allow anybody from the public to come and testify before the Senate Rules for that. And Representative March is on the House Rules, and your time is when, Representative March?
On Wednesdays at 1:30. So from 1:30 to 2, people are welcome to come. If no one comes, we don't take any testimony, obviously. But any Wednesday at 1:30.
We have gone to the communities of Kaiser. That was the first one of these that we held. They then went down to Medford the very next day. They then went to, some of us, I won't get into it with my fear of flying, they went over to Bend. And yesterday, a group went to Newport. Tonight, we are here. And next week, we've got you did a town hall in Portland last Saturday, but...
We'll be in Coos Bay on Friday. So if you want to drive down to Coos Bay and join us.
And I think that there's this handout, right, Marjorie, is out there, which tells you all the different other town hall meetings that we have planned in case you would like to go to one of those if you can't come to the state capitol. We're working very hard to try to get input. And what we're about, I'm going to stop talking here in a minute and ask you to please come forward, identify yourself, and tell us your feelings. We're trying to identify what is called a community of interest, what you think is a community of interest. And the courts have been pretty broad on that. A community of interest can be pretty much what you think it is. It can involve a neighborhood association. It can involve a city or a village or a town. Steve, you want to add something?
Oh, ethnic communities, counties, you name it, schools. We're looking for what you think is a community of interest, not what we put some suggestions down here, but these are only suggestions. Some people have considered those communities of interest. You have to tell us what you think is the important community of interest in your area.
If you haven't picked up the sheet, I'm going to read from it because in the back of at least page, it's one of the pages, the back of the last page, it tells what I call are the commandments that govern how we draw these districts. I do want to highlight one. It says that no district shall be drawn for the purpose of favoring any political party, incumbent legislator, or other person. I do want to highlight that so that while we're all state legislators here, we have to be particularly sensitive to that. The final comment before I ask you to please come forward is, given the population increase for the state of Oregon, each House seat should have in it around 57,023 people, not registered voters. We're talking about population. So each House seat should average about 57,000 people. Remember I said that each Senate district consists of two House districts. Each Senate district should average, should be around 114,000. And I might add that my Senate district is well over that. Representative Backlund's House seat is well over that. Representative Carlson's House seat is over that. We are in an area where we've got to give up population, whereas other communities that we go to have to gain population in their House and Senate seats. And that's just the dynamic of the way that the state has grown. This area, the Salem-Keizer, what I call metropolitan area, mid-valley area, has grown dramatically. The city of Keizer alone has gone through the ceiling. It's grown 47%. 47% went from about 21,000 to 32, something like 32. It really shot up there. Salem, what's Salem? Was it 20? Or what was Salem? I should know. I shouldn't. I guess I don't have my... We have figures on the cities and the counties, and I don't have those in front of me. But, Marjorie, could you... This is Marjorie and Anna. They're doing all the work for it. I'd just like to tell you this for the record. What's Salem? What's happened in Salem?
136,920.
From what? All right, we went from 107,000 Salem to 136,000 in 10 years, and what did, and I've already talked about Keizer, so we have seen tremendous growth here. With that, and I'm going to call the names of people who signed up. Just because you didn't sign up doesn't mean you can't come up here. In fact, I would like to have everybody come up here and tell us what you're thinking, but so I don't want anybody to be shy, and I'll start with Dennis Coho, please. If you would come up. This is our little, it's a little podium. And this is being recorded. We're making an official record, all of which will become a part of the record that we're going to use to draw these lines. So this is an official record. Please.
My address or anywhere.
I would like you to identify who you are, and if you feel like you want to go further,
okay,
because you have something that we'd like to know about, please feel free to do so.
Okay. I'm Dennis Coho. I'm president of the board of the Salem Area Mass Transit District. I represent Subdistrict 2, which is, generally speaking, Keizer. There's seven board seats in the Salem Area Mass Transit District, taking in the general areas of the cities of Salem and Keizer and the unincorporated areas of Jan Ray, Fort Wayne, and so forth. I also served three terms as mayor of Keizer, and would have been here when you came to Keizer, but the transit board was meeting at the same time, and thought my first obligation was there. The times I've been through this before a little bit, was probably 20 years ago when I was a staffer in the legislature, and of course I was focusing in on political registrations and all that stuff that we're really not supposed to do. And I've not looked at that now. That's not my job. It's not my aspiration. So it's easy to just look at the population and think about what we as a community of Keizer are, where we're going, and try and draw some conclusions to what that might mean for redistricting. I don't want to set up a dispute. There's no Hatfield and McCoy battle between Keizer and the city of Salem, although probably at times it is. But they are distinct communities of interest. And I think that clearly with Keizer's growth, I think there can be no doubt that it needs to be kept together, intact, and it will then be the community of interest for a House seat. I think with the population that's required for a House seat is it'll be well over half, just the corporate city limits of Keizer. But further than that, I believe it ought to be the dominant community of interest in a Senate seat. And just guessing to stay within county boundaries insofar as possible, that would probably move, link it with a House seat that would be to the north and maybe to the east of it. And we have changed, the state has changed over time how the Senate and House seats were arranged, so there certainly would be precedent for that. But I think rather than diluting the community of interest of Kaiser by pairing it up with a House seat that's all or predominantly Salem, you'd then have Kaiser at, 32,000 in a Senate district of over 110,000. So clearly it would lose its voice, or certainly would be diluted. So that's the message I would bring to you, and I appreciate that you are taking the show on the road and getting input around the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Are there questions for Dennis?
Thank you very much. Frank Garcia.
Good evening, Chair Courtney and members of the committee. Thanks for your time this evening. For the record, my name is Frank Garcia, Jr. I am a resident of Salem, and I serve as co-founder and executive director of the Oregon Latino Voter Registration Education Project. And you're talking about population booms earlier. Well, Hispanic population definitely reflects that population boom. We increased our population by about 144% over 10 years statewide. So we've done our part in adding to this explosion. And more specifically, the Hispanic population is a interest group here in Salem and in Marion County. In the Salem area, we comprise 15% of the population, 17% in Marion County. What we've done with the Oregon Latino Voter Registration Education Project is to, we're a nonprofit organization, we're nonpartisan, we're interested in and dedicated to increasing the political participation of Latinos throughout this state. More specifically, we've registered 6,000 new Latino voters statewide in this last year's election and have educated and registered over 10,000 Latino voters since 1996. So we've touched communities throughout the state. But I'm here today to talk about the Salem area and our interest in ensuring that the Hispanic population of Salem has access to this process, finds that this process is equitable and fair, and that we're included in these hearings, which I appreciate this evening. And we'd like to be included at other points throughout the process, i.e. if you have special committees where decisions are being made, we'd like to be involved with that process. The other thing is these meetings are, we are a working class population, and it doesn't lend itself to access and equity if these meetings are held during the day and in the afternoon. So in the evening, it lends itself to hearing from this population, from this voice and this constituency that is becoming more and more integrated and a part of the larger Oregon. I think that in the Salem area, we would be best served if we had one Senate district and two House districts as opposed to the four House districts and two Senate districts. I believe that by having the two-in-one scenario, it lends itself to ensuring and protecting the Latino community's interests and making sure that our voting strength is not diluted. I'd also like to state that we also, as a Latino community, are interested in presenting to you our own redistricting maps of what we think the lines would look like, and would very much welcome the opportunity to present those to you at an identified time. And I think really that kind of touches upon what we're most interested in. We're really interested in ensuring that our voice is heard and it's not diluted. And I believe that if we do have two House districts and one Senate district, it would lend itself to the continuity of the Salem-Kaiser community which the Latino community is obviously a major player in that.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes. Actually, I want to make a point. Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Although our current rules ask that any particular plan that's submitted to the legislature be a complete plan, I certainly would be happy to look or work with you on some particular lines in any particular area of the state that you would like to. And we have available to, we have a public terminal that the public can come in and look and work at in the Capitol. I'll be happy to try to incorporate into any plan that we're working on any of those lines, specific lines that you want to give us. So.
Great. Thank you for that opportunity.
Yes, sir. Yes, sure.
Thank you for your testimony.
Yes.
And met many Latino people at their doors. And so my sense was in Washington that there are many that live around in the state high school area and in that part of District 32, and also many that live down in the Richmond school area, kind of, you know, closer to the downtown area. And I know there's been some discussion because some of the districts that surround Salem actually have to get a little bit bigger, and they actually have to be populated in Salem that have to move. Is your sense from knowing the Salem area that the people who live in that McKay High School area would see themselves more as a community interested in Salem, or would they see themselves more as a community interested in the rural area that's outside of Salem, or do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, the rural sense, can you cover that, where that's at?
That would be like state sublimity, definitely more than a canyon.
I would say that it would probably have a sense of connection with the Salem community, much stronger. Exactly. And the other population that's very strong is northeast Salem. I mean, look at the school enrollments of North Salem High School. I mean, in that whole area is a very strong population of Hispanic population.
And those are right now in
representative
action.
And Kaiser has a sizable, significant Hispanic population.
Right.
How much population? Pardon me, Marjorie. How much population did you say Salem was? 130 something. So it could almost totally fit within one Senate district. If you're not including Kaiser, and if you're not adding Kaiser to it, that's just slightly over a
right.
Senate district.
Yeah. So about approximately 30,000 of that would be Hispanic population.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good question. Just, I want to be sure you understand, and everyone else tonight, just because you testify tonight, you can come back and see us again. Please feel free. I mean, you talked about coming back. You can come back to any of the other meetings we have scheduled, or come to the Capitol. I mean, like today, I want everyone to understand. You don't just get one bite at this apple. Come back with written documents, maps, or whatever. So I hope you understand.
We'd be happy to do that. We plan on doing so, and we'll plan on being at the other districts of interest. And we really appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming here tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, help me here. Mary Lou Cornesso?
Okay. He did it. He did it.
I'm
he did
it. Cornejo. Okay.
Buenas noches. Good evening. I chair Clinton and members of this committee. I'm Mary Lou Cornejo, and I'm a veteran of 24 years of service in the Oregon Army National Guard. I have been a community advocate since I moved here in 68, specifically with the Latino community, because that was an underserved population here in Oregon. Right now, I currently work for OSU Extension here in County 4-H, plus owner of Latino Enterprises. So I'm here tonight to ask you to realize that the Latino population here in Salem is split currently between two districts. And part of those districts are I want to say the concentration would be probably where I live, in the northeast side of town. And I'm glad that you asked the question about McKay, because it certainly belongs in the Salem area, in the connected Salem area, not a rural community. Right now, like Mr. Garcia said, the numbers are climbing. And so we would ask that when you do the redistricting, that you would attempt to draw a district that would give the Latino population a potential for a voice in a House district. So with saying that, I would also like to offer my services as being able to be part of a committee that would look at this plan and also help along that continuum. Because as a Latino outreach coordinator, which is what my title is currently, I am working with the Latino community from Jefferson to Service, Salem Kaiser, and Woodburn in terms of outreach. So I also would like to go on record, if you would look at this as the back part of this where you have the redistricting field hearing. I look at Tuesday and see a growing Latino community. I look at Portland, that's already in place, Hillsboro, Beaverton that's coming up to par, Woodburn that's extremely Latino, Pendleton and the surrounding areas, Hermiston, Nazareth, all those areas that are currently heavy Latino populations, and Corvallis is getting to that point with Lebanon and some of those areas. And I ask that you look at changing the time frames if you want input from the Latino community. Because like Sister Garcia said, we are a working community. And so consequently, they can't get off at 9 o'clock in the morning or at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I would like to go on record as asking for that.
I just nodded to the committee administrator here. It may be difficult at this stage. I do want to say that the leadership was very good about taking these hearings to the field. There was some discussion at the very beginning about whether we should have field hearings at all. And the idea was at least get out and talk to people. And I think this has been, it's been good. And as you can tell, we're trying to get to the right places, but it is difficult when we have staff that work normally daytime too, and
okay.
And
may
so I know I understand.
May I suggest another course of action? May I suggest that you do PSAs through community access channels to get this message across, because the Latino community certainly looks at community TV, and be able to get that message so that there are some professionals or paraprofessionals like myself that would be able to take a block of time out so they would represent that piece.
But I know when I was using that
type of radio station, correct. And that is the biggest medium to reaching the Latino community is the radio. So I would Dallas, KWIT in Dallas and KBCY in Woodburn. And you'll also find that if you go Eastern Oregon, that there is a radio station outside of Ontario on the Idaho side that caters to the Latino population in terms of outreach through the radio. So if you need any of the radio stations around the state, I can provide that information for you also. Any questions?
Thank you. The issue, even though we've already done several hearings, yeah, I like to refer to it as a work in progress. We're learning as we go how to do this better, and I think your comments, I'm always challenged about how, it's one thing if you hold a meeting in a timely fashion, but nobody knows about it, you haven't done anything, you might as well have it in an untimely fashion. So that community TV, and I didn't think of that one. I didn't think of that. Did we?
So was it in Spanish also? See, and I think what happens too many times is we do the assume factor that everyone in our community will be able to relate to that message or whatever, when in reality there are language barriers. And I would say to you and throw up a caution flag that just because it's in Spanish doesn't mean that you are catering to an immigrant population. you are catering to the children that are born of that population, to the extended family, to aunts and uncles who live here and are citizens here. So if it becomes a topic of conversation within that family core unit, and they're aware of what redistricting really means to them in terms of voice, then they will be able to be more articulate on the subject, so that when you come into town, they say, oh, we know what that means. But if it's just redistricting and it's in English, there's a big old stretch there. You know, I mean, as you can tell just by looking at your audience here tonight, that somewhere there was a gap. And you're very well-meaning, and I truly appreciate the fact that you are holding these community forums, because it's certainly of interest to the people here in Salem and across the state. But by the same token, when we look at a committee, it's got to be inclusive. And if there is no Latino representation on your committee or no input, but the assumption that we'll do provide services in the traditional manner, the word isn't going to get out. So my passion is to make sure that there is Latino representation in committees that are being formulated that are going to have an impact on this Latino community, so, or any Latino community. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, and I'm sure that, because I'm also with the Oregon Voters, OVIP, and I also belong to HART, which is an educational piece. I'm really steeped in looking at all the issues that pertain to the Latino community, because I've dealt with this community since 68. And it's not just about the Latino community. It's about bringing them to the table to be a part of the greater community, to help everyone along that continuum, not just a community, but our community. So, any questions?
Is MALDEF active in Oregon?
Excuse me?
MALDEF, Mexican American Legal Center.
Yes, we have.
Oh, thank you.
Another question.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Por nada.
I got a call from me that's actually taking time away from the evening committee to be here, and she needs to return to the Capitol. She'll probably still be in the meeting sometime this morning.
Yeah.
Right.
I will get a report of what
we're here. Thank you, Janet. Appreciate it. Brian Clem, please.
Can everybody hear these things picking up pretty good?
I'm trying to redo my math here while I've been listening, because I'm learning a lot as well. My name is Brian Clem, and I run a business here in town as sort of an independent operator. I do computer consulting, service and repair, and training. I teach some courses to senior citizens at Chemeketa Community College and also at the Salem Senior Center. And then I also serve on the board of the Salem City Club and also the Salem Parks Foundation. And I don't pretend to speak for those groups tonight, but that's sort of where my experience comes from in dealing with issues of civic involvement in this town. And the one thing I guess I would advocate for is to try and make Salem its own Senate district. And I know numerically that then leaves us with some more people that live in technically the city of Salem. And what I would think would make the most sense along sort of existing political boundaries would be the county section that is in Polk, West Salem predominantly, I would think would make up about the right numbers to maybe be in a different Senate district if you couldn't get everybody in one. I think there's also some folks on the east side of town, east of Lancaster, who don't have City of Salem technically as their residence. They're in the county, but not in the city. And so if out in West Salem, the numbers worked out that you needed more on this side, you could pick up some of those folks who are really living in what a lot of us think of Salem, but they're a block off the city limits, and that's out east of Lancaster. I just think it doesn't make sense to have, probably from your perspective, but definitely from the citizens, to have someone who lives and works and does business in Salem trying to represent folks in statement and sublimity, if at all possible, to avoid that. We have an orchard in Hood River in one side of the family, and I know that it would be a challenge for me to represent the views of an orchardist and a guy who works for state government doing computers or something at the same time. So I think that there are differences in the sort of culture and economic makeup of the different areas that don't make our current configuration make a whole lot of sense. And I think since the numbers...
Oh, Rep. and I also belong to HEART, which is an educational piece. I'm really steeped in looking at all the issues that pertain to the Latino community because I've dealt with this community since 68. And it's not just about the Latino community. It's about bringing them to the table to be a part of the greater community to help everyone along that continuum, not just a community. That's our community. So, any questions?
Is MALDEF active in Oregon?
Excuse me?
MALDEF, Mexican American Legal Defense.
Yes, we have.
Oh, thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. For nada.
I thought it was going to call somebody actually taking time away from me. Evening committee to be here, and she needs to return to the Capitol. She'll probably still be in the meeting sometime this morning. Right. Thank you, Janet. Appreciate it. Brian Clem, please. Can everybody hear these things picking up pretty good?
Trying to redo my math here while I've been listening because I'm learning a lot as well. My name is Brian Clem, and I run a business here in town. I'm sort of an independent operator. I do computer consulting, service and repair, and training. I teach some courses to senior citizens at Chemeketa Community College and also at the Salem Senior Center. And then I also serve on the board of the Salem City Club and also the Salem Parks Foundation, and I don't pretend to speak for those groups tonight, but that's sort of where my experience comes from in dealing with issues of civic involvement in this town. And the one thing I guess I would advocate for is to try and make Salem its own Senate district. And I know numerically that then leaves us with some more people that live in technically the city of Salem. And what I would think would make the most sense along sort of existing political boundaries would be the county section that is in Polk, West Salem predominantly, I would think would make up about the right numbers to maybe be in a different Senate district if you couldn't get everybody in one. I think there's also some folks on the east side of town, east of Lancaster, who don't have City of Salem technically as their residence. They're in the county but not in the city. And so if out in West Salem, the numbers worked out that you needed more on this side, you could pick up some of those folks who are really living in what a lot of us think of Salem, but they're a block off the city limits, and that's out east of Lancaster. I just think it doesn't make sense to have, probably from your perspective, but definitely from the citizens, to have someone who lives and works and does business in Salem trying to represent folks in statement and sublimity, if at all possible, to avoid that. We have an orchard in Hood River in one side of the family, and I know that it would be a challenge for me to represent the views of an orchardist and a guy who works for state government doing computers or something at the same time. So I think that there are differences in the sort of culture and economic makeup of the different areas that don't make our current configuration make a whole lot of sense. And I think since the numbers really would allow for a City of Salem Senate district, I think that's the way to go, because I think that the city of Salem has some unique needs, and they don't share those with some of the other areas, like the question of the state buildings and property taxes that we don't get in this town because of all our state properties. So that would be what I would sort of lobby for, I guess. And the other
piece. I hadn't really thought about house districts too much because I didn't know how the numbers worked out, but it seems like it would be similar that you could keep two house districts in the city of Salem, then you would have some extra. You would have about 20,000 extra. And again, I would think West Salem might be better served being with other parts of Polk County because they have other things related to being a county in common. And I guess that's really all I have to say. It just seems to make sense to me more than the current configuration. And after hearing what folks from Kaiser had to say, I do think that Kaiser folks live in Kaiser for different reasons than they live in Salem. And although some of the groups I'm on talk about what about a Salem-Kaiser City Club, I think if it's possible to just get Salem as its own Senate seat where one senator can think about the needs of Salem and not have to worry about balancing that with the needs of other areas, that would be a better situation and make that senator's job easier. Although, I haven't been one, and you have, according to you might have your own thoughts. But that's my opinion.
All right. Questions? Steve, you have a question?
No.
You always look like you have a question. Do you have a comment? Did you
want to... No, all right. That was very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian. All right. Ken Becker.
My name is Ken Decker in District 32, and I signed up because I thought I was in attendance. I didn't know it was to speak, but now that I've got the chance, a couple questions. Because first of all, the magnitude of the process is just absolutely staggering. I've been watching it at least all my adult life, and I'm just amazed that it ever comes out. When I heard Representative Hooley talk a couple of Saturdays ago, and she was saying how in her district there needs to be some adjustment, but it's not just a simple matter of that. You've got it because up north there's more than partly, you know, that's going on much more so with these house districts. And but one question I have is the existing precincts have to stay all within one district. Is that correct? The existing voting precinct? A voting precinct can be divided up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the other thing is, What I'd like to hear, I mean, I know people are here to give input on what their views are, but I would like to hear what some of those specific issues in terms of adding, taking away, and certainly you must have seen different proposals by this point. You know, what are the kind of issues that you're wrestling at with those? Thank you.
Well, we don't, just so you know, we just got the figures 2 weeks ago.
Three.
We just received the official figures from the U.S. Census Bureau 3 weeks ago, and there has not been an official map yet drawn for the state of Oregon, either for the congressional districts or the House or Senate seats. We are taking input, both the Senate rules and the Senate House Committee and their staffs, as well as the staffs here, are putting input in terms of looking at the different districts and see who has to gain, who has to lose. You take the county, Washington County has exploded with growth, just exploded. Bend has just unbelievable what's going on in Bend. I mean, we talk about Kaiser and Salem, those areas have just blown up. So we're just, it's a hydraulic thing, whether we start from the south and move up through the valley and then go to the eastern Oregon. So at this stage of the game, we're just trying to put different pieces together, different representatives and senators are looking at their respective areas, trying to get a feel for, you know, what they've got to gain or lose. And at this time, it's very fluid. It's very, very fluid. And by the way, I might as well tell you, we're supposed to have this done by June 30th. And that's tomorrow. And if the legislature doesn't do it, the Secretary of State's going to do it. And as far as congressional seats are concerned, if we don't do it, the federal courts are going to do it. There is no time. That's just the way it is. I mean, and those of us on the Rules Committee, like my friend here and myself, we really have got a tough little situation. Not to represent a Backman or Carlson don't, but I'm telling you, when you're on one of the primary committees, our life is, I don't have a life. Not that you care, Ken, but I don't, you know, it's very different. And in fact, it's downright frightening. I was hoping you might get in the districts, to tell you the truth. I was hoping you might start to talk about that because we didn't have anybody talk about congressional seats here yet. And no one else has signed up, by the way, so I'm hoping somebody will come forward and do some more talking to us. But so I can't give any more than that right now. I'm not trying to play games. We're working, you know, what do we do? This district's got to give up. I think my Senate district's got to give up with 7,200 people. 7,200 people. There is a Bend Senate district that's got to give up
15,000.
How much? 15,000.
At the House district.
I know. What's Carnos? Carnos has got to give up 20,000. I think Carnos has got to give up over
25.
20. I think Senator Bev Carno in the Bend area has got to give up over 25,000 people. See what I mean? And he's in. Whereas we've got other districts that in Portland, they've got some districts there that've got to pick up pretty good numbers. Isn't that right, Steve?
5,000, 7,000, 10,000.
So how do you drive the Bend numbers in a way that you start to affect the Portland numbers? See, that's how incredibly difficult this whole thing is.
And that's where you get the
line. Oh, yeah.
It is a puzzle with 60 pieces in which also 30 have to fit over the top. But you get to change the shape of the pieces as you go along. And every time you change the shape of one piece, you change the shape of all the rest. So it's an interesting process. 10 years ago, the legislature failed to do this, and the Secretary of State did the districts that you have today. And the districts you have today may very well have reflected in 1991 the communities of interest that existed at that time. What Kaiser was how big in 91? It was much smaller. Huh?
20,000.
So it's now. I mean, it never would have been the major portion of a district. Now it is large enough to be a major portion of a district. So the Hispanic community, for example, in there was a strong presence in Salem, but not nowhere near. What the Latinos are in Marion County today. So the lines that exist or that were drawn in 91 don't necessarily reflect communities of interest in 2001. And that's why we're trying to hear from you to find out what the community of interest are. So when I hear my good friend Senator Courtney say my district has to lose, I come here and say I don't see a district. What I want to see is what is the community of interest, and we'll start with that, draw from there, and not necessarily from the existing lines. I don't think the existing lines are necessarily the place to start, but that's why we're here, asking you, are there other communities of interest? And so with that, why don't we see if anybody else who came in since would like to speak?
Hi. For the record, my name is Amanda Vallejo. I'm a resident of Kaiser. And I have a couple of things that I'd like for you to consider as a board. One is how important it is for our community, the Latino community, not to have it diluted by the drawing of these boundaries. An example of that is our city of Kaiser. Kaiser has grown by 47%. And within that 47%, in total, our population is 16%, and that's just in 10 years. I think the other thing to consider is that within the Latino population and the vote, it's divided up among racial groups as well, and each one has a specific issue that needs to be addressed. One of my colleagues brought up the issue about translating some of the documents into other languages. But one of the other things that we'd like to for you to consider is that even in some of the more areas outside, the more rural areas, or depending on the socioeconomic tracks that you find in these areas, that there's an issue of literacy as well. And so how you translate a complicated government document to Spanish, think about when we have to translate those complicated government languages to just play English.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this is an issue that we would like for you to consider as well as you move forward in your meetings outside of this when it is in groups that are heavily populated by our Latino community. So I think that's a pretty big and important issue for us. And as well as, again, I can't stress enough to please consider not diluting that population because the Latino population is one growing in votes and growing in numbers. And this is just the beginning. We come in all colors, all shapes, from all different parts of the world, united by one thread, and that's the language and a part of our culture. And I think that that's an important piece not to lose sight of. Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Excuse me, if I don't mind. I thought you were going to escape. you mentioned the difficulty of translating this into which is it's an arcane subject and kind of technical and complicated,
yeah,
into Spanish, and yet it's my understanding that a number of the Latino communities, Spanish is actually the second language, in that they might be one of the Indian groups, and so that Spanish is...
I think it goes beyond Indian. There are colloquialisms within the Spanish language from one part of the world to the other. Spanish spoken in Europe is very different from Spanish spoken in South America or Central America or other Americas itself. So I think there is a basic language. It's Spanish. That's not where I'm going. Where I'm going is a literacy issue to say it's one thing to translate a complicated document like redistricting into plain English so that I understand and that everybody in this room understands. But yet it's another thing when you're going to translate it to another language,
mm-hmm,
and make that easy or at least understandable enough for someone to say, you know what, this is important to me because I believe that it's about equal access. If we don't pay attention to these issues, then what you're looking at is under the Civil Rights Act of 1964, clearly a Title VI issue. And that would be a class action from the Latino community to say we were denied equal access because we were not A1 notified in a way that reached our community. And so that's kind of what I'm saying, is there a liability here as we move forward in the redistricting to say, to take into consideration that it is a pretty large group. And with things like the executive orders under limited English proficiency that was signed like August by the president and several other things that are in place, I think it's an issue that we can't lose sight of, especially during this issue.
Well, clearly we're going to need all of your help. Could, for the record, we get your telephone number or a contact number,
sure,
since we didn't get it on a sign-up sheet?
Okay. Now?
Sure, if you don't mind. Or just give it to Marjorie over there.
Okay.
So you don't have to tell everybody here. So I'm sorry. I apologize.
Thank you.
Is there anyone others, please, would like to come forward and talk to us? Would some of those who talk to us like to come forward again, had second thoughts or emotional changes or whatever? You want to come forward? Does anybody want to talk about the congressional seats at all? Just saying, because that is the congressional seats have to be done as well, and they're going to start on the Senate side. Yes, please. Dennis, if you come forward, and Ken also, I guess, wants to come forward. I appreciate it. We're in Congressional District number 5. I'm not allowed, that makes the Representative March fall off his chair because he doesn't like me to designate those things. But there are 5 congressional districts. We're in 5. Just so you know, we're right in the heart of District 5. Which one of these maps is up, right?
The one directly.
Right here? This is the one where it shows the whole state, shows where we are at. And I will say this. That number 4 is got to get 50,000 people, and number 1 is going to have to lose 60,000 people. That's the dynamics going on in this little chart here. So number 1, Congressional District number 1, which is up, what, Washington County over towards the coast, 60,000 people, that's how much it's grown, whereas the number 4 below 5 has got to gain 50,000. I realize we're not talking lines, but the fact remains that that's where we're going with that little situation.
And I think it was, I think you used the word hydraulic, which is a good one to describe that, that gave us at the end of the 81 session what was known for 10 years as the helicopter district. That was the west side of the Cascades from Lane County up to the Multnomah County border, practically. Mm. So it's, that was the same time where we used to have Marion County in with the second congressional district, in with Eastern Oregon. And District 5 is going to be affected by the needs of Districts 1 and 4, obviously. It should go without saying, but just to make sure that someone does say it, there is little community of interest with Marion County and Eastern Oregon. Whatever the ups and downs that need to happen really should stay within the Willamette Valley, close coastal environs as opposed to cresting the Cascades and going east.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. I really appreciate that because we do need to get some record going on the congressional speaking. Ken, please.
Now, my question to follow up earlier when I asked if you had to use existing precincts, then the legislature, when they're drawing these, they can just disregard where precincts are and divide them into 2 or 3 if that's what they deem appropriate?
Well, yes, yes.
The the precinct reprecincting occurs every 10 years, every time redistricting is done. For the most part, a lot of precincts will stay the same. They generally change along the edges, but remember, it's not just the legislature that has to redraw districts based on population. City council will be redrawing, your county commission will be redrawing, so there, if your school boards or your community colleges have districts, they will also redraw those based on population. And so as all of those things are being redone, there will be some precincts that have to change. And the county clerks would prefer we try to keep that to a minimum. That's why they like us to follow, in some cases, city boundaries, county boundaries, existing political boundaries in those cases. But by law, we have to equalize population. It's both a federal law and the state law that you see before you. To the extent possible, we equalize population. And that overrides the wishes of keeping precincts just the same.
Right. One more follow-up on that, and that is there's no requirement the precincts have to be the same size as each other then, probably. Okay, and the last thing is, when I look at my voter registration card, it tells me what House district I'm in and Senate district, but it doesn't tell me all the different districts. So when I, as a voter, go to my voter pamphlet and compare my registration card, I can't tell what ESD district I'm in. I may not be able to tell what transit board. And I know you're not at the county level, but I think for the average voter, when they're trying to conscientiously vote, that'd be helpful that the voter card show all those districts.
Yeah. This discussion brings something to mind that I almost made a mistake on. I want to emphasize again, each House district is nearly as possible shall have 57,000 people in it. Not registered voters. They don't take me wrong. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. So the precinct thing speaks to registered voters to a large extent. So I want to emphasize that. And each Senate seat shall have 114,000 people in it. So I have to keep coming back to that. So I feel I need to do that because I think people are starting to draw these districts in terms of you got to have 57,000. I think it's going to happen. I see people in the audience, not necessarily here, although I'm not so sure it hasn't happened here. They're thinking 57,000 registered voters, 114,000 registered voters. No, it's people. The number of registered voters will vary dramatically, I'll bet you, within these houses. That depends upon voter registration, and just like it varies as to how many of the people who are registered turn out. So please, that is something that's very, very important to stay fixated on, I think. It's so easy to move into registered voters. We'd have a night that didn't give me. If it was registered voters, we'd be having a whole different situation going on in terms of what we're talking about here. Please, anyone else on either the whatever's on your mind? Well, not everything. Yes, Brian, please come on up.
I haven't thought at all about congressional districts, but since you asked.
Yes.
The one point that I think I would...
Ryan Clem, for the record, please.
Again. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
And I'll have to give you a few more things that I once did to why this opinion is the case. I went to school at Oregon State and lived in Corvallis. I was the president of the student body at OSU, and for 5 years I worked for Senator Wyden, running his office here in Salem, and one of my areas was Corvallis. And what I would like, when you talk about the dynamic of four needing to grow by about 50,000, I wouldn't want to see four just grab Corvallis, and I'll tell you why. When you work in a congressional office, as I did, there's a lot of issues that the universities have with the federal government that you would think would be in common, but in effect they're in competition. A lot of federal grants that professors at both campuses are competing against each other for. I can remember several times when I had folks from U of O lobbying our person who ran the office in Eugene, and then folks from OSU lobbying me about the same exact grant they both wanted for the same funding, and they were competing against each other. And that system worked pretty well, because what it did in our office was force us to make our case on the merits and not have that decision sort of shifted down to one person who would make that decision at a lower level. And so I think it would help, in effect, to have two Congress people making the cases for those different parts and not have those two institutions sort of get have a favorite, and the congressperson has to sort of pick just on their own without having to argue or advocate or lobby with a colleague about the future of federal funding as it relates to those two institutions. And it's, there's obviously the other rivalries, but I don't think those are as relevant as some of the federal funds that Congress people do have to deal with. The land grants, the space grants, the sea grants that OSU gets. I would hate to have, you know, poor Congressman DeFazio deciding whether maybe he should decide to shift it away for a year just to be fair to the other part of the system. So I would resist if I were the line drawer, that easy grab of 50,000 people, which is essentially Corvallis, because it would really make it difficult for either campus to get a fair shake, I would think, in the halls of Congress rather than just in the office of that one congressman.
Thank you. Somebody recently came to visit me, and she said she and her family live in Corvallis. Her husband works at OSU, and she said, "I'm a Beaver, and I don't want to be in the same congressional district with the Ducks." And I mean, she felt, I'm telling you, she felt very strongly about that. I don't want to be with the Ducks. The Ducks got theirs, the Beavers got theirs. Now, I'm not saying that's a community of interest, but I don't know, maybe it is.
Fur and feathers.
Yeah, that's anyone else? Well, we've got the record, right? Please, take one of these. It's a work in progress. We've had some very good comments on how we can communicate these meetings better, and which I appreciate. Feel free, again, to show up at any of the meetings or to come to the Capitol and attend our meetings. And I appreciate very much you turning out tonight. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. I guess we're willing to stay here and talk to people if they care to have any additional comments about this or with the staff. So thank you very much. Thank you.